From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. If you have ever started a business, then you know, at the very beginning, you are sales. You are marketing. You are those departments. And I've heard from a lot of people. They've told me that this is really intimidating because they don't know how to do sales. They don't know how to do marketing. And that's why it's pretty helpful to hear what the major mistakes that people make are.
I think one of the biggest things that trips people up is they confuse the interests of the company with the interests of the customer or the buyer.
This is Justin Schreiber. He is a guy who's pretty qualified to talk about the mistakes that people make with sales and marketing. He's run big sales teams. He's run big marketing teams. He is now the CMO of People.ai. And what is that?
We auto-populate CRM, all the business activity people are generating, email, calendar, and then we use AI to help you to be smarter about the way you manage your pipeline and coach your sales teams.
And he's the host of a podcast called The Legends of Sales and Marketing. So anyway, like I said, guy knows sales and marketing. And so, you know, he just said that very interesting thing a second ago, that people confuse the interests of the company with the interests of the customer or the buyer.
And a lot of times when you're apprehensive to go to that customer and ask for the sale, for example, that's the little voice inside of your head saying, well, maybe that's because this isn't actually in the best interest of the buyer.
So what do you do instead? Well, we will get into that in a minute. Let me tell you what this episode is. So when I first was in touch with Justin about having him on the show, I said, look, this is a show about problem solving, right there in the name. How can we approach sales or marketing specifically focused on solving people's problems? And he said, well, why don't we go through the top three marketing mistakes that people make? And I thought, that sounds really interesting. So that is what we are going to do. All this stuff that you heard before, that's kind of set up, and we're going to get into it a little bit more and show how to overcome that stumbling block that Justin just talked about. And then we're going to dive into his top three marketing mistakes that people make and how to solve them. Coming up after the break. I admit it, I have always been a sucker for free food at the office. It was like the simplest, easiest way to make the team happy. Just buy everyone lunch. But of course, it has been a while since I've had too much pizza with my coworkers, which raises a question. As where we work continues to shift, can this kind of benefit shift with us? DoorDash for Work has an answer, and the answer is yes, with a new suite of benefits for companies and their employees. DoorDash for Work enables you to bring your team together safely, in person, or remotely, with a benefit that can improve employee happiness and productivity. It is simple. With a Dash Pass for Work subscription, employees get free delivery and reduced fees on eligible orders from restaurants, grocery, and convenience stores, giving them time back in their day. Want to make sure your team is happy and that they are not hungry? Get DoorDash for Work and make work delicious. Go to work.doordash.com/problem solvers to learn more. Again, that is work.doordash.com/problem solvers. Terms and conditions apply. All right, we are back. Talking today with Justin Schreiber, the CMO of People.ai and host of the Legends of Sales and Marketing podcast, about his top three marketing mistakes. Now, before we get into those in particular, let's pick up on what he was saying a minute ago. There was that really interesting insight about how people confuse the needs of their own company with the needs of the person that they are trying to market or sell something to. So let me just play a little of what you heard, and then we'll keep rolling with it with a conversation about that point.
And a lot of times when you're apprehensive to go to that customer and ask for the sale, for example, that's the little voice inside of your head saying, well, maybe that's because this isn't actually in the best interest of the buyer. And it's amazing what happens when you flip things on their head and you say, what does this buyer really need? How can I help that person? And now all of a sudden, in a true and authentic way, you're going to them and saying, I get you. I know where you're coming from. Actually, I have something that can help. And that's very different than how can you help me to close a deal, generate more money, whatever the metrics are internally that you're tracking.
Right. So it's don't ask for an opportunity, be the opportunity. People often are so focused on what it is that they want that they start to treat everybody like a service provider who will just provide what they want. But that, of course, is not how relationships, even transactional ones, are actually built.
And the reality is that you hear that all the time, be the solution, create value for your customer. And in many cases, it's lip service. The way you know if you've truly achieved that level is when you find yourself telling the customer, you know what, I could sell you this, but I'm not going to because I don't think it's right for you. Let me recommend this instead. A very basic example, I've got a buddy, he sells cars. And I said, John, how many times did you tell the customer over the past month that they shouldn't buy the car that they were talking to you about? He says, funny you ask, I told him three times. He's the top salesperson at this dealership. And he said, nobody else says that, but I say that. And because I'm willing to say that, people trust me. And I end up selling more in the long run.
I love that. It reminds me of going to a restaurant and asking the waiter or waitress, like, what's good? And I hate when somebody says everything. Everything can't possibly be good, right? And so I don't trust you if you say everything is good. Tell me what's good. And then also tell me what's bad.
Yes.
Something bad on this menu. I just know it.
Yep.
So, all right, let's dive into your three top marketing mistakes here. And this first one I really love. I don't even entirely understand it, but the contrast sounds fantastic to me, which is confusing derivative content with real thought leadership. Yeah, nobody wants derivative content, but talk to me about that. Talk to me about how that becomes a trap people fall into.
Yeah, so there are so many retreads out there. If you read blog posts, what people are publishing, all under the auspices of thought leadership. It's actually pretty hard to find fresh ideas out there, novel ideas. And yet, going back to the point we were talking about before, people crave valuable insights that they can actually apply in real life scenarios. And so what often happens is marketing, they have a content calendar, they got to publish a couple times a month, they're under the gun. And so they just start combing the internet and saying, oh, that's interesting. We're going to repackage this. We're going to use a couple of different words, maybe put a slightly different spin on it. But at the end of the day, it's the same stuff. And it is insane how many different ways you can make the same point and say the same things. That's derivative content. So my rule of thumb, there's actually three things that you need to do to really nail this one. Number one is you need to be able to identify what true thought leadership looks like. And I've got three criteria that I use when I work with my team. Number one, I always ask, is this a little controversial? Are we taking a point that is going to ruffle some feathers? Because the reality is, if you're not ruffling feathers, you're probably not taking a true position on something and getting people to react. The fact that people react to you, that's a good thing, even if they may be negative in terms of what you're saying. Number two, is it really novel? That means you have to go out and find out what's in there. And then is there something that's very different about what we're saying? And then number three, is it also credible? I can make these sensational or outlandish comments, but if I don't back it up with fact or sound logic, it doesn't really matter. So when we sit down and we talk about what's our content agenda and we bring pieces forward, I ask, what's controversial about this? What is it in here that nobody else is talking about? And then lastly, how are you backing that up to demonstrate that it really matters?
Now, as soon as I heard him say that, I thought back to my own content marketing, so to speak. I don't think of it as content marketing, but you know, I post a lot on LinkedIn and Instagram. And I find that if I include a little bit of something that people are going to disagree with, or some people are going to disagree with, but you know, it's not something that everyone's going to disagree with, or that people are going to think I'm foolish about, or that anyone's going to get like angry about. It's just something that gets people talking. It creates a little conflict, that those posts always tend to do better. It's really, really interesting. So I understand. I see that you want this kind of controversy. You want to find this balance between something that is going to get people talking, but of course isn't like explosion, cancel controversy. And how do you find that line? Well, I asked Justin to kind of dig deeper into controversy.
Let me give you an example of a controversial point we recently took. Forecasting is dead. Forecasting is the bedrock of sales. Like sales leaders, when you ask them what they do, they say, I forecast. So arguably, we're being controversial at that point, but it also reinforces a bigger thesis that we have about sales, which is we now live in an era when if you're looking backwards and trying to anticipate or plan your business based on what happened yesterday, which essentially is what a forecast is, you're missing the opportunities, you're missing the risks. And the rate of change now makes those forecasts a lot less valuable than they used to be. And so we want people to come back and say, I disagree with you, and here's why. Because then all of a sudden we're in a conversation and we can start to exchange perspectives that lead to a very rich dialogue and hopefully open the door for us to introduce some new ideas and some new solutions.
Right. So it's not that you're just poking the bear to poke the bear. What you're doing is you are articulating a point of view that might feel a little challenging to people, but that is ultimately an expression of a core value that you have that you really can stand behind. Okay, now let's move on to number two, the second of his third marketing mistakes. Number one, obviously, was confusing derivative content with real thought leadership and figuring out that difference between just kind of blandly putting something out there or finding something that people are going to actually talk about. Number two, failing to recognize the cost of hijacking audiences' attention.
We live at a time when attention is the precious commodity. Everything that in your world right now is competing for your attention, including this little watch that I have on my wrist, which is constantly thumping and constantly beeping. It wants me to pay attention to it. Now, of course, the minds behind that at Apple knew that the more I pay attention to the watch, the more they pull me in and the more that watch is part of the daily fabric of my life. Well, on social media, on any kind of media, it's all engineered now to capture attention. Here's the rub. If I give my watch the attention that it's asking for, and I suddenly discover that it wasn't worth the attention, the next time it beeps, it's the boy who cried wolf. I'm not going to pay attention to it. So marketers know that there are all sorts of tactics that they can use to hijack attention. Things like extravagant subject lines in email. Again, going back to this previous point, controversial comments that are being made. The problem is that the first time that I paid attention to that, congratulations, you got me. But now you have to retain me. You have to earn my attention. So one of the metrics that I actually really like related to this with respect to email campaigns, email is a classic example of hacks where I can get you to click the first time. What I'm looking at though now is click to open rate. Because if someone clicks on an email, but then doesn't take the action that I asked them to take, what that tells me is, okay, I got their attention, but there was not enough value behind that in order for me to retain them. And that now has become a much more important metric in my marketing organization. Whereas before, I think the metric du jour was just simply clicks.
Yeah, because clicks is a garbage metric. Clicks means nothing. I mean, it's very simple to get people to click on something, but will they click a second time? I mean, once they know what's behind the wall, once they remember what it was like to click the first time, will they do it the second time?
That's absolutely right. You only get one chance, maybe two chances. If you burn those, then you burn the relationship. And I love the idea of applying this idea of LTV, lifetime value of that audience, and recognizing that maybe I wait until I actually have something meaningful to say, and the value is going to come a little bit later. But the lifetime value of that conversation is much higher than if I just get them once and then lose them.
And I have to say, as a guy who works in media, this really resonates with me because I have seen these, you know, I'm not going to name any names, but see these publications put out stuff on social media as a means of driving clicks. But, you know, how many times can somebody click on something before realizing that they're getting fooled over and over again, right? That there's nothing behind the wall, that these stories are empty, or that there's just nothing new being added, that the headline doesn't really reflect the story. Like you can't do that for very long. And I you know, I'm sort of harping on media here, but companies will do versions of the same thing where they say, well, here's a great deal, or here's a great product or whatever. Then you dig into the fine details and it's just not there. And are you ever going to click again?
I'm glad that you brought that point up, because over the past decade and even the past 5 years, I think that consumers of social media, other forms of media, have become much more savvy. When these platforms were more novel, people were excited just to engage, and the discretion that they used to tweet, for example, the discretion that they used to consume those was much lower. We're now dealing in a society, though, where these channels are primary means of communication, exchange of information. We're applying a much higher bar. I saw this when I was at LinkedIn. I noticed that we could get away with a much lower level of quality in terms of what we were pushing out back in 2015 than we could back in 2019. And this actually became a topic of conversation that we had. The bar is raising. What are the new standards we need to apply in order to respect the audience?
So, okay. Now we have covered two of Justin's three big top marketing mistakes. Number one, confusing derivative content with real thought leadership. Number two, failing to recognize the cost of hijacking audiences' attention. And now, by the way, that you've heard that, you really can appreciate that phrase, failing to recognize the cost of hijacking, right? You can do it. You can hijack people's attention. You can get it. What is the long-term cost of that? All right, we have one more big marketing mistake that we are going to cover, but first, a little marketing, so to speak. I have done a lot of freelancing in my career, and it has helped me get to where I am now. So I feel a real connection to the premise of this podcast I want to tell you about. It is called Freelance to Founder, and it's a show about how freelancers and solopreneurs can scale their businesses. In each episode of Freelance to Founder, you will hear from a new freelancer who's in the thick of becoming a founder by scaling their service-based business. They dive into the successes that they've had so far and how to replicate them along with their biggest challenges. The show is co-hosted by Preston Lee and Clay Mosley, who have both grown from freelancers into founders of thriving small businesses. And in each episode, they also offer their best advice and actionable homework to the guests and listeners with the goal of finally achieving founder status. Freelance to Founder has new episodes airing every Thursday. You can find the show wherever you're listening to this podcast. All right, we are back talking with Justin Schreiber. We have covered two of his top three marketing mistakes, and now here is the third. It is coming in too hot or too cold on issues related to social responsibility.
First of all, I think that we all acknowledge that there are tremendous inequalities that are taking place in our society, and businesses at the same time have a platform or a podium that they can use to put forward certain social causes. It's important, though, that we're thoughtful about how we use that podium. When I talk about coming in too hot, let me give you two great examples. Over the past year, a number of examples of social injustices that were perpetrated at a massive schedule or scale that had captivated the attention of a global attention. I saw a lot of brands come out with statements against the atrocities that had been committed. And that happened almost instantaneously. The day after these events or these moments, you saw people posting on LinkedIn. You saw people publishing on Twitter. The next day, there was a backlash against those brands by the public saying, thank you for publishing, but what exactly are you doing to back up the words that you use? Again, this is a demonstration of the level of sophistication now that audiences have. They're able to tease apart words from action. And especially today, when action means so much, authenticity means so much, people see right through that. Another great example, we have an opportunity on LinkedIn, for example, to promote our brands. And a popular thing to do these days is to change the background color of your brand depending on the month and the social cause that is being celebrated. We just celebrated Black History Month, Women's History Month. And so it wasn't uncommon in many cases to change the background color. Someone came to me in my organization and said, I love this opportunity to promote these very important causes. I've prepared a list of 12 different causes that we can get behind so that each month we can change the color of our background. And I said, well, first of all, thanks for all the thought you've put into this. And I love the fact that you're thinking about all these different groups. Here's the question, though. What about that 13th group on the list? They're only 12 months in the year. How do I go to that 13th group and tell them, yeah, you're important, but you're not quite as important as number 12. So unfortunately, we're not going to be able to put you on the list. What I love about that example is it reinforces the fact that resources are finite. Whether it's the opportunity to post on LinkedIn, whether it's the opportunity to use your monetary resources to promote causes. And the name of the game is to be focused and selective in terms of what you really believe in, and then put your resources against those causes. And maybe that means that there's two or three that you really believe in. But if those are the two or three, make sure you back it up with action and real meaning.
Hearing this made me curious for Justin's guidance on how much somebody should be promoting what they are doing. Because I will tell you, as a guy who receives pitches all day, so many companies, they go and they do something good, or they say they're going to do something good, or they set it up. I don't know. I have a hard time evaluating what they're actually doing. But I will tell you that they sure do send somebody out to let the press know about it. They are always letting the press know about it. And, you know, at some point, you know, if you're in my position, and you're getting enough of this, you start to wonder, of course, how many people are doing this to do the right thing, to follow their own values or the values of their team and their consumers. And how many are just doing it for the press? Because it doesn't feel so good. So anyway, what does Justin say about that?
Tell you about a good friend of mine. Her name is Margaret Malloy. She's the CMO at Siegel & Gale, which is one of the premier branding firms in New York. She believes passionately in this idea that you need to enfranchise all groups, bring diverse groups together. It enriches the conversation. She was actually responsible for running a number of branding panels over, she's done this over several years now. And at one point she came to the realization that most of the guests on those panels were either white males or white females. And actually someone brought that to her attention. And she said, you know, you're absolutely right. And I haven't thought about that, but that is a cause that I believe in. So her next step was not to start promoting publicly, we're going to start to do this, we're going to embrace diversity. Her next step was to actually spend more time getting more diverse panelists onto the panel so that in every case, she could say, there's a person of color now that's represented on my panel. That took more time. I think the investment was in the order of maybe 25%, even 33% longer to organize these things than it usually did. And in the long run, she actually never drew direct attention to that, but people noticed and they brought that up. I think that's a wonderful example of putting action before words and letting the action speak for itself. And I think the real litmus test is, like Margaret, are you willing to do something that's harder? Are you willing to spend more time, potentially more money, more resources in order to do this? And if the answer is no, don't talk about it. Don't say it's an important deal. And if the answer is yes, then just do it and the truth will come through.
So there it is. Three marketing mistakes. I'm going to say them one more time. Number one, confusing derivative content with real thought leadership. Number two, failing to recognize the cost of hijacking audiences' attention. And number three, coming in too hot or too cold on issues related to social responsibility. All so important, and all that really get down to respecting your audience and your customer and doing what you're doing for earnest reasons where you understand what the value is that you bring to other people and not just what value you can get for yourself, which goes really back to that point that Justin made at the very beginning about how people confuse the needs of their company with the needs of the person that they're trying to sell to. So let me just end with one story that Justin told me that really kind of summed all that up nicely.
I actually recently had the opportunity to interview someone from a very different industry, the wholesale jacket manufacturing industry. And this was actually the president of London Fog Industries. He had been, for a large part of his career, a buyer. So he was on the buying end of these jackets. And then he moved over to the wholesale side. That gave him a very unique perspective because every time as a salesperson, he approached a buyer, he saw himself in that person. And he knew exactly what that person needed to be successful in their job. And he also knew what would hurt that person. And what made him so successful as the seller is being able to empathize with the person, inhabit that person as he was simultaneously talking to them. I think that's tremendous advice. If we as marketers, as we as sellers, can always inhabit the body of the buyer that we're talking to, we're going to make the right decisions. We're not going to hijack their attention needlessly. We're not going to try to ask for credit for things that we're not doing. In the long term, we're going to be focused on helping them. And that's the best way to help ourselves.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Problem Solvers wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Monday morning and you don't want to miss it. And hey, be kind. Pass the show along to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost. And did you solve a problem that would be good for this show? Let me know about it. Visit my website, jasonfeifer.com, JasonFeifer.com, where you can find my contact information and all sorts of other valuable info. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for all your entrepreneurship needs. And even better, subscribe to our magazine, which is just full of the smartest entrepreneurs solving the toughest problems. My name is Jason Feifer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Thanks for listening. And hey, let's go solve some problems.